to the Parthax Diary podcast. You join me for the week commencing the 17th of November. December, Paul, not November. Well, I'm sorry if the 17th of November sticks in my craw, Cecil.
Yeah, it's the 17th of November. Hasn't happened yet. It's the 30th of October at the moment we're recording this. Me and my Margaret wife are getting married on the 17th of November, and I am reminding Paul about this fact at every opportunity.
Oh no, Cecil, you won't shut the fuck up about it. Now, Cecil, how you... Oh, why?
Because I will not tolerate swearing. Now, what game are we playing?
Not playing a game, Cecil. I'm trying to do my podcast reading for Christmas. There's only two more entries to do.
Oh, I do apologise. I want to play Minecraft, Paul.
I don't give two shits about Minecraft anymore, Cecil.
Yeah, well, we've had y'all for a year.
Yeah, but we had Minecraft for a year first, Cecil. Don't forget that. We did Minecraft for a year. We've done my podcast for a year. What are we going to do for the next year, Cecil? You don't know, do you?
I've got several irons and several fires, Paul.
Don't give a shit about your ironmongery. Just want to know what podcast we're doing, or videos, or nothing.
Paul, I would like you to do a year's worth of interesting comedy sketches for YouTube, where you go out and about, ring people up, interact with humanity and folks.
And in the real world, Cecil, we'll probably just play Red Dead Redemption 2 or something.
Right. Remind the people what happened last week on your podcast.
Well, what we did was, not a lot. I just had a week at home, really, doing very little. I decorated my bedroom. I can't remember, Cecil.
It means you did nothing. Right, let's just continue the reading. Now, I hope everybody is nice and relaxed, sat down, feeling festive, because this is a Christmassy podcast with a Christmas story inside it. So maybe listen to it near bedtime and you might just nod off into dreamland with Paul's beautiful, delicate voice scratching you into oblivion. So, Paul, prepare yourself.
I'll just have some fun fact recorder then.
Ideally, this should be Advocat. I would like you to partake in a tipple of Advocat or pot if you want to. Disgusting noise, Paul.
Yeah, but by the... Whatever. Right, let's get this bitch rolling. Cecil.
What?
Let's get this bitch rolling.
What are you talking about?
Read the fucking the date, Cecil. That's your one job. Which I see you're making more difficult and difficult every time you do this, Cecil. You're just pissing.
17th of December.
Right. Thank you for that, Cecil. 17th of December. The Christmas tree fell over on Dad this evening. I remember that. We were all sat in the living room watching the 6 o'clock news Christmas special. When Dad's leg went to sleep, so started to jiggle it a bit. He must have caught the table leg that the tree's on, because the tree's on Cecil's right, on his coffee table. Because... Down it came. It all kind of happened in slow motion. We all saw the tree slowly wobbling and toppling. Then Dad put his arms up to protect him. For some reason he shouted,
Oh God, no, help me, please, please, Dame Helen Mirren, come to my assistance.
Which goes to show how much time he actually had before the tree fell on him. He could have just caught it. He could have stood up and catched it, but he didn't. If you weren't so old. Anyway, he is fantastically old, so he just had to sit there, so he just had to sit there and watch gravity play its game. Oh, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry, I was distracted. Maundy Mundy kittens chewing on a monitor cleaning brush that I got from the pound shop. Stop it, ginger fool. Right. If Cecil wasn't so old, he could have stood up and stopped the tree falling on him. But he is, and was, so fantastically old. So he just had to let gravity play its part and do its thing and let the tree come crashing down on top of him. The tree is a 6-foot plastic tree that we've had for about 20 years. And once it had landed on Dad, all we could see were two arms poking out the side, waving around in panic. There was muffled cries for help coming from the tree slash man, but me and Mum were too busy laughing our backsides off to help. It wasn't until Dad screamed, "I think it's punctured a testicle," that we slowly went to his aid. Always laughing, forever laughing. His testicles were fine and protected by his tweed trousers. I mean, they might be slightly bruised, who knows? I'll never know. We lifted the tree off him. Excuse me. He was half laughing and half rubbing his eye because a bit of tinsel had touched it, and it was very dusty tinsel. I don't think Mum dusted it last Christmas. I gave you my heart. Buzz the next day, you gave it away. This year, to save me from tears, I gave it to someone special. December 18th. I got bored this afternoon, so I decided to write a story based on a dream I had last night. And for full disclosure, the first paragraph, sentence, not entirely sure, of this was written by Miss Armitage Biddy, whomst I stole this from. The first sentence slash paragraph, not the story, obviously. Alright. This one goes out to all the sexy elves out there. And I don't mean dwarf women. I mean genuine elves. Can you hear that shit outside? Shut up. Gonna do a reading here. Bastard. Disaffected Winters by Margot Le Fontaine III, a.k.a. Chunky Blubby Boy Parthax. From a dark, sickly orange sky, the snow blustered and fell silently, blanketing the country lane, trees and hedgerows. A lone figure blindly stumbled along the icy roadway, intermittently slipping over, becoming sodden and bruised. He lurched from side to side, holding his left arm to his breast. Blinded by pain and excessive masturbation, he stumbled over. That figure was me, Paul Thax. It was Christmas Eve. A fact I only knew because my David Dickinson watch told me so. Moments ago I was in a house, a large house, full of the baubles and trinkets of the season. A large man had started to walk towards me, laughing with menace. Fear gripped my heart, and, in a panic, I ran. I stumbled down the nameless country lane. A fell voice could be heard on the wind. A shadow and a threat passed my mind. Hobbits? No. I stopped. The air smelt fetid, putrid even, as if a foul demon from hell were at my very heels. I looked at my heels. I stood in a dead pheasant. The fell voice on the wind grew louder. I could make out a figure chasing me. With constant pain shooting up my left arm, I tried to walk on. But the elements were against me. And like a blimp in a wind tunnel, I was blown over. The wind rushed past me, pummeling my face with ice and snow. Exhausted, I was incapable of moving. Footsteps approached. My eyes, unable to focus, could make out just shapes of figures. A large, rotund gentleman stood over me, reaching out as if to touch my face in an inappropriate fashion, if I'm honest with you. I closed my eyes and just began to weep like a woman. I heard the figure clap twicely. More footsteps approached. They all seemed to be unaffected by the weather, and so the beans moved about my person, grabbing at my flanges and handles. They picked me up, and petrified, I dare not open my peepers. I had the sensation of being carried by many sets of many, many little tiny hands. Two of them were cupping my anus. After several minutes, I passed out of the harsh winter weather. I sensed an intense white light upon my face. I opened my eyes, but I was blinded by the light. I could hear several unintelligible voices around me. But with the growing warmth, a new sense of confidence swept over me.
Who are you? What dark purpose have you?
But there were no replies to my questions. The whispering voices stopped. Suddenly a large, deep, bellowing tone was emitted from all around. So loud it was almost deafening the shit out of me. Suddenly I remembered the last Thursday edition of David Dickinson's Real Deal. But, excuse me. I do apologise for that. Mum ringing me up in the middle of my reading. Ignoring that. Suddenly I remembered last Thursday's edition of David Dickinson's Real Deal, where a lady from Cheltenham had a lovely ornate Art Deco figure with a naked woman leant up against a lamppost. While this was an erotic thought, it wasn't the main purpose of the thought. The lady who was selling it was clearly terrified of making a deal with the dealer, so David Dickinson came over to help her and he put his arm round her. He addressed her as girl, even though she was clearly in her 60s. He then used his own unique style as he started to talk to the ladies, you know, which is looking at the camera while not talking to the person, as is his wont. And he said to her, "Now, don't you be frightened, my darling. He's not a monster. There's no need to be so terrified. You're a beautiful girl. Your breasts are pert and firm. Your figure is erotic and sensual, like me, the Duke David Ricky Dicky Doodoo. Now, my angel, you tell that dealer that you want nothing less than a pony for it, maybe even a gibbon for that figure." I remembered those powerful words of eroticism and felt a great confidence swell up within me. I rose like a powerful umbrella, growing in size, expanding with power and dignity and just like, you know, you know what I mean. Poorly written book, this, by the way. My sight returned and I saw several figures stood around me, mouths open, a look of horror and shock upon their tiny faces. I looked down. I was completely nude, save for my man bra system, which acts as like a nipple chastity belt for my nipples. The loud noise I could hear stopped. The figures about me were very small, almost goblin-like, the panic just continually growing on their ever-terrified faces. There was about 20 of them around me. I was in a space, but I couldn't tell how large or small it was because it was just pure white. Almost luminous were the walls, as if I was suspended in a large white fog, glowing, of course. I had no sense of distance, save for, you know, where the tiny chaps were in relation to me. I'd go so far as to say there were gnomes, I reckon. I began to approach them, stepping on the warm floor. Must have had underfloor heating, it was very nice. The gnomes recoiled in terror. I stopped. "What's happening? Oh, where am I?" I demanded to know with all the power and authority of a nude fat man sweating out his nipples.
"Oh, forsooth, thou art he, thine tumultuous man. 60 years and aught hath Robin Cocksparrow spake aught of your arrival. Is thine thou thither thine art?" said the lead gnome. "Oh, what the hell? What are you talking about?"
I said to them. A wave of terror flashed over their faces, then they all just fell over backwards, and then there was a bright flash of brilliant red as all the gnomes suddenly burst into flames. Almost as soon as the flames appeared, they disappeared, along with the gnomes' bodies. There was no doubt left in my mind that my powerful stench had killed them. Wouldn't be the first time. I fumbled around the room. Its brilliant white light seemed to grow dim. Vague angles appeared, each and every one at 90 degrees to itself. After a few minutes, it was clear I was in a perfect cube. There were no visible doors or windows, just pale white walls. In the middle of the room was a plinth made of pure ice, yet it was warm to the touch. After about 20 or so minutes of screaming and beating myself off against the walls, I just fell to the floor. Time seemed to stand still. The light never grew nor dim. The temperature was constant. It was neither hot nor cold. My nipples were in a constant state of flux between flaccid and semi-erect. My David Dickinson watch had stopped at exactly 12 midnight, but it seemed to me that about, I reckon, 14 hours had gone. 14 hours, 37 minutes and 58 seconds had passed before I suddenly felt a pressure on my bladder. The familiar sensation that we all feel upon our bladder from time to time. If you're a woman, maybe slightly more often. I needed to pizzle. Looking around, there was absolutely nothing in the room to piddle into. So do a cup, some kind of utensil or vessel. Not a utensil, that'd be weird. Or a receptacle. Nothing. So I chose one corner, right out at random. And like a walrus trapped in a box, I let my urine liquids flow free. The liquid was warm and yellow, as it usually is. But upon contact with the wall, a strange melty transformation took place. My urine turned bright blue and the wall began to melt. So, remembering a scene from Alien 4, Alien Resurrection, I began to cut myself a little door with my whittle piss. Success! I was free from the room. The room I'd been trapped in was in turn inside another room. It was like a past the parcel of rooms, you could say. And you should say. The room that my room was in was a room like a normal room with room things, like a door, which lets you go from one room to another room. But this room was all like roomy. A large room it was. Quite a lovely room. The walls were covered in portraits of old dukes and kings. No David Dickinson, though. There was a bed that was lavishly swathed in red and green fabrics of some sort. I don't know what. Polyester? Velvet? Don't know. The floor was covered with an incredibly intricate carpet, upon which many cherubs, gnomes, elves and pantomime cows were embroidered ponced. Looking around, I could see a large walnut and mahogany chest. So, quietly I walked over to it, and there was no documents on it or anything, so I just pulled open the top drawer. But what was in the top drawer? Nothing. Bloody nothing. And nothing in any of the other drawers. I was getting really fed up with this. I wanted to know where I was. Furious, so I walked over to the other door, the room door, and I opened it and sort of had to squeeze myself through the next room because it was quite small. This door led to a big room, and in it were dozens and dozens of large machines, all being operated by hundreds of gnomes. The room wasn't actually a room, it was a massive cavern. No beetles in there as far as I'm aware, but as far as I could see there was tiny chaps working away on machines. At first they didn't notice me, but when I caught my mambro on a poorly placed candelabra, I let out a yelp as it twanged against my back. The gnomes turned towards me and started screaming. The noise was deafening. I was unable to cover my ears, partly because I only had one hand. You know, remember, it got chopped off ages ago. Do you remember that? And secondly, because I'm so chubby, I can't get my arms all the way up to my ears. It makes washing behind them very difficult. I did all I could to block out the sound, but it was overwhelming. Shut up, tiny gnome monsters! I screamed, and again the gnomes fell back and burst into red flames and disappeared. Soon after, the machines began to malfunction without their little tiny operators. Toys and games began to pile up and explode out of the machines. I ran over and stumbled as copies of Lights Alive and Kaplunk were pummeling me being thrown from their machiney conveyor belts. I fell over into a pile of Jack Skellington dolls. I removed the one that had lodged into my deepest of all my chins and began to waddle away again. In the distance, I could see a light. But all around me, the machines began to back up and explode. To my left, it was raining Xbox 360s. They're not Xbox Ones now, isn't it? To my right was a pile of Tickle Me Elmos. But I could see my salvation. Up ahead was a large opening which led, so it seemed, to a forest. But then, suddenly, behind me, a massive explosion. I continued to waddle as fast as my chunky legs would carry me. But I looked round to see a tidal wave of Daleks and baby Annabelles rushing towards me. Even at my full waddle, I couldn't outrun this wave of plastic. It swept me up. I was tumbling, plungers pummeling my every crevice. Baby Annabelle eyes just sort of entering me through various orifices. And then suddenly I felt a falling sensation, the noise of wind. I opened my eyes to see I'd been jettisoned out the cave, and I was now flying at full speed towards the trees through the air, like a festive partridge. And before I could blink, I hit a large pear tree. Then there was blackness, nudeness, coldness, Loch Ness? Don't know. The blackness seemed to last a lifetime, though I wasn't aware of it and have no memory of it. So to describe it's just silly, isn't it? I woke up in a large, soft, warm bed. Dazed and confused was on the TV showing, film. The room looked like something from a Christmas film. Everything was steeped in red and green. All the objects looked like they'd been made from wood. You know, everything had that rustic sort of feel. The fire was large and wood-based, with many logs piled next to it. And wherever they could, they'd just put red and white candy cane motifs. You know, had I been a gambling boy, I would have said that this is Father Christmas's bedroom. Looking around the room even more, I saw a very, very large fat man. He was sat on a chair in front of a desk. His head was in his hands and he clearly was in the process of weeping openly, like a powerful and strong, confident woman. "What's the matter?" I asked, and the man turned round, his eyes crimson from weeping again, like I say, like a woman. Clearly by his beard and rotundness, this was indeed Father Christmas.
"Oh, you've killed my elves, Paul. You've broken the machines. You fat idiot, have killed Christmas."
In shock and disbelief, I put my hands over my mouth. Terror filled my heart, and I began to weep like a woman.
"No, don't cry, Paul," said Father Christmas.
I rubbed my eyes and then realised that I had two hands. Oof, it was as if nothing had happened. So I looked over at Father Christmas and said,
"Oh, praise be, my hand's back. But Christmas is dead. There must be something we can do."
He tapped the side of his temple. He was deep in thought and said,
"Well, yes, actually that could work. Paul, there might be..."
Suddenly the whole building began to shake. There was a mighty crash, and then for a split second, Father Christmas looked at me with a deep sadness in his eyes. Then a giant Monty Python-esque foot came crashing through the ceiling and just burst Father Christmas to death whilst crushing him under its cartoony toes. In shock, I just sort of sat there, and the foot disappeared back up through the roof, and the rumbling stopped. I went over to where Father Christmas had been sat. All that was left was a note which reads, "This is the very reason people shouldn't have sprouts for Christmas. Nothing good will ever come from eating such a vegetable. Now, you fat fool, wake up and refuse your mother's demands." Reading this, I let out a little trump and just shook all over. I came to, sat on my sofa in the front of Christella, covered in drool. To my right was Margaret shouting at me to get up and go peel and cross the sprouts for Christmas. And I started crying and begged her not to make me do the sprouts. But she said that if I didn't, then Christmas would be cancelled. But I refused, So the nasty cab, I got out all my presents and then threw them in the bin. Then she said the F word at me. Then something about no one ever helps her out around the house at Christmas. And then she went round and ripped the Christmas garlands down and pulled the tree over. Cecil was crying and I was crying. Mum was livid and very, very drunk. But, you know, what's she going to have me do? Because we all know what evil happens if I try and prepare and cook and eat the sprouts. You know, which is worse, Mum has to do a bit more housework, or Father Christmas ends up being killed. Selfish of the old woman, isn't it? Well, there you go, dear diary. That was a dream slash story I wrote slash had. I think that's my dream, is what I fear will happen if Mum makes me do work on Christmas Eve. That, you know, I think I'm justified in not having to do any work on Christmas Eve. But oddly, she's been such an uncharacteristically good mood recently. I don't think she'd even think about ripping the Christmas decorations down. She's absolutely loving the festive season. Actually, it's very strange. She normally does hate Christmas. Auntie Beryl, however, does love Christmas. Loves Christmas to bits. You don't think they've swapped places, do you, dear diary? You know, if I had an identical twin, I think it's something I might do. But, you know, for japes and laughs. But I don't think I would ever meddle in the festivity of the season. I don't think I would anyway, but you never know, do you? 19th of December! Thistle. Muted at the end there. Yes, it was a little bit, wasn't it? Sorry. I asked Mum if she actually was Aunt Beryl today, and she just laughed at me. But she didn't say no. Don't care, do I? She still looks like Mum, and she's loving Christmas. Dad's loving Christmas, and I'm absolutely bloody loving it. I say bloody loving it because I got 3 paper cuts on my advent calendars today. I got too excited because I got an advent calendar bingo, and I got a bit too rambunctious trying to rip them all up. Got too into it. It's fine. It's alright. That's what plasters are for. I often play advent calendar bingo, and if you don't know how to play it, then here's the rules. To play advent calendar bingo, you need at least 4 advent calendars, preferably with chocolates in, but don't matter if it's got cheese in, that's fine too. The calendars must be of a typical design, you know, i.e. 4 rows of 7 windows or doors, depending on how you want to look at them. Then, as every day is opened on each calendar, you see which calendar is the first to have 4 doors in a line open. It's usually the Maltesers one. It works best if you've got upwards of 10 advent calendars, as the is much more competition. When you do get a bingo, take a chocolate decoration off the Christmas tree and eat it, because you're a winner, a Christmas winner. Now, if you do get 2 bingos in one day, then you get to eat a whole chocolate orange. It's delicious.
20th of December!
Oh, Cecil, rambunctious. Today, me and Mum were playing Who Flinches, whereby you pretend that you're going to slap the person in the other face. You pretend you're going to slap the person in the face, but you stop as close to their face as possible. And if they flinch, then you get a point. The first of 5 wins. Though, after slapping Mum in the face 3 times, she punched me in the nose and refused to ever play this again. So I asked Dad if he wanted to play. For some reason, he didn't. So I had to play with myself. I'm great at Who Flinches against myself. I never flinch, and only ever hit myself in the nose every 3rd time. It's a good ratio for me, isn't it? This afternoon, Dad asked Mum if they could make Christmas cakes, but apparently it was too late and they wouldn't be ready in time. How long do they take to cook? I know they're dense and horrible, but I didn't think they'd take 5 days to make. So in the end, me and Dad went to Tesco's and bought 1. They didn't need to buy 5 spare ones, as there's absolutely no risk of me eating that cake. Oh, it's revolting. Doesn't even have the right to have the name cake on it. Should be classed as pre-poo, i.e. food that's just as unpleasant before it goes in as when it comes out. I can think of a few other pre-poo foods I'd like to see removed from the earth. Any biscuit with currants in. Healthy crisps. What's the point in that? A sun-dried, no-salt potato flat is not a crisp and has no business being next to the Marmite Walkers. Rice cakes, disgusting. Fruit and nut chocolate, no thank you. Obviously all fruit and veg needs removing from the earth. And brown rice, disgusting. And don't get me started on a Garibaldi. It's much later now, about 11 o'clock at night. I've just had a whole chocolate orange. I put it all in my mouth at once, and I managed to, you know, get it in, and not choke to death. Unlike last year, where I nearly did choke to death. You see, last year I put it in my mouth and then decided to drink a cup of hot chocolate at the same time as it being in my mouth, thinking that the hot liquid would melt the orange chocolate. You know, at a reasonable pace, and I could just sort of munch it down. But the problem was that it did melt the hot the chocolate orange, but far too rapidly. And I sort of gagged and did a swallowing action at the same time. Just sort of, yeah, swallowed the hot chocolate orange combination. And the whole ball got lodged in my throat. Worst bit was, Mum and Dad weren't in the house. And I just began to panic. I had a chocolate ball lodged in my throat. I couldn't breathe at all. So I only had two options, didn't I? The first one I tried was foolish. I thought, I've got to get rid of it. I've got to melt it somehow. So I just poured the rest of the scalding hot chocolate in my mouth and tried to swallow it, thinking that it would rapidly melt the chocolate. It did not. It just burnt my mouth badly. So the only other option was to give myself the Heimlich manoeuvre. So I thought, anyway, it didn't work. I threw myself against the walls as hard as I could, but the wall in my bedroom's only plasterboard, and after the third thunk I went right through it and onto the landing, and then I fell down the stairs. Well, I rolled like that girl in Charlie in the Chocolate Factory Turns Purple. So I bounced down the stairs. But luckily for me, this dislodged the chocolate orange. Only it didn't dislodge it that it went out my mouth. It lodged it that it went downwards, almost whole, into my tummy. And I have to say, it didn't really break down much in the next 2 days. I felt it going through my entire system, and I had to poo it out almost whole. Whew, I reckon that's worse than giving birth, you know. Chocolate orange out your anus. But, you know, it's got to come out, and it did come out. It burst its way out and thunked into the toilet with quite a cannonball-y thud. And, you know, it didn't look that much different from how it went in. I'm not ashamed to say I had to remove it from the toilet and inspect it. I just sort of sat in the bathroom, trying to, you know, rub my poor bum. But I was in turmoil looking at this chocolate orange, to wondering what would happen if I cut it in half and tried to eat a bit. Because, you know, it's got to be quite a good thing to claim, saying, actually, I've eaten food that's been right through me. And come out the other end. You know, they've got them coffee beans that have been eaten by monkeys, and then the monkeys poo them out. This was the same thing. So I ate a segment. It did not taste nice.
December 21st.
Christmas is coming, and the Thax is getting fat. Fatter. I had two boxes of matchmakers last night. You know, this was very naughty of me, because they were wrapped up under the tree, and there were presents for Mum and Dad. I'd bought them, obviously, for Mum and Dad, but I just couldn't resist any longer. Mum and Dad had gone out Christmas shopping in the morning to get my present, so obviously I couldn't go with them. And there was a cooking program on the TV, cooking all Christmas foods, and I thought, hey, I'm getting peckish here. Ooh. You'd think 25 advent calendars in the morning would be enough chocolate for me, But you'd be an idiot, an absolute idiot, to think that. Idiot. Well, that was this morning. This afternoon, something unpleasant happened. I was sat on the sofa just sort of looking at the Argos Christmas guide when there was a buzzing from my penis. At first, I didn't know what it was, but then the theme tune to Dad's Army came on, and I knew it was Cecil ringing my mobile telephone. It was just in my lap. It wasn't my penis vibrating. I answered my telephone, and Cecil sounded flustered. He said he was calling from a news agent a few streets away, and Cecil said I had to get there as soon as my little chubby legs would carry me. So I thought, oh, what's gone on? What's happened? Has he been arrested for being too wrinkly? I didn't know, so I thought, right, come on then, Paul. And 47 minutes later, you know, I spent 28 minutes on the toilet beforehand because that chocolate was not sitting well. I think it's the vegan one. I came into the newsagents and Dad was stood there behind the counter serving an old woman, and Tony was stood next to him reading a large manual on how the till works. Now, I don't know if you know this, dear diary, but for the most horrific period in my life, I worked in a small supermarket not long ago. Well, a while ago now, actually, thinking about it, 15 years ago. At the supermarket, I did advanced till work and even chanced my arm at small talk with regular customers. So, for some reason, Dad had called me to help out in his shop. I thought, hey, what's going on here? I said to Cecil, what's going on? And apparently it was Tony's mother-in-law's shop, but she'd fallen off some ladders trying to put a Christmas tree up on a flagpole outside the house. Excuse me, I've just had a whole drink of coffee and my gazpacho soup's flapping. Anyway, so Tony's mother-in-law fell off a ladders while putting a Christmas tree up outside the house. It's what you get for not putting your Christmas decorations up before the 21st of December. What are they planning at? First weekend of December is the latest date you should have your decorations right up. Everybody knows that, Jeffrey. Anyway, Cecil left, and he left me and Tony to run to shop. Tony said that he demanded I help him because he went with me to London and to go along with the Down Syndrome TV programme. And I don't know, maybe I was just tired or over chocolated, but I couldn't think of any way to get out of it, so I just agreed to it. Must be the Christmas spirit in me. Either that or all that brandy I drank. Anyway, I had to look at the till, and annoyingly, so annoyingly, it was the exact same one that I'd used at the supermarket. Though why the hell I admitted this, I will never know. Because as soon as I told Tony that, he positioned me behind the counter, and I was once again told I had to serve humans in the selling of things, stuff, and shit, items, don't know, stuff, whatever the shop sold. The shop was meant to stay up until 10 p.m, but by 5 p.m, me and Tony were just exhausted. We put the sign to closed, and just as we locked the door, a gang of some youths came to it and started banging on the glass, demanding to buy some energy drinks. Tony told them we were shut, and we both walked to the back room and just hid behind a big box of Space Raiders. They tried the door about 8 times, all the while shouting and whooping at us, the way that the youth will now. They thought that we had to come out via that door, and they just said they were going to rush us as soon as we opened it. Luckily, Tony had his mobile phone and he called the police. And the police showed up 10 minutes later, but the youth had just gone, apparently. And Tony got a lecture from the policeman about prank calls, claiming that there was no youths and we were making it all up. Bloody typical, why do you bother with paying your taxes? Stupid. I got home and flopped on the sofa, and Mum patted my tummy and brought me through a tea of hot dogs, beans, I don't eat the beans, they're a vegetable, and a Jenga of chips, which I love, absolutely love a Jenga of chips. Me, she builds a tower and you've got to take one out and eat it, and then it's just a challenge on how many you can eat before the whole thing collapses into your brown sauce. I gobbled it all up and then fell asleep on the sofa. For some reason, Nick Knowles was in my dream. He was nude and rubbing his beard and running at me, very aroused. I woke up with a horrific start at 11 p.m. and I didn't really know where I was. And Mum and Dad had apparently gone to bed and just left me in pitch blackness, to shat myself. I fumbled around and found my phone and turned the torch on and just sort of looked at the Christmas tree and had a sort of festive revelry in my mind, remembering all my Christmases past. I got a little bit emotional. I don't mind admitting that to you. It was just like everything was twinkling in the dark light, and I thought some tooth mice might come out and give me a little present. They didn't, but you know, it was a nice thought to have. And then I looked at my fucking phone, and there was a text message which read, from Tony, this is, saying, "Be open at 6 a.m. Get here for 5 a.m. You owe me." So I just flopped over to the right, started crying, and set an alarm for 5 a.m. and then fell asleep.
22nd of beautiful December.
4:37 a.m. Tony is an absolute son of a bitch. 11:28 p.m. Oh, good Lord, high upon a mountain of fire and lightning. What a day. I'm utterly exhausted. So if I fall asleep writing this, then I can only tell you to go funk yourself, because I don't even give a shit. This morning I got to the newsagents just before 5. Tony was quite impressed. My alarm didn't even wake me up. I was well awake. Son of a bitch. Tony was frightfully impressed. That was until he realised what a foul mood I was in. Oof, shocking. You see, I hadn't had any breakfast as Mum wasn't up yet, and I didn't know how to make a bowl of cereal. I don't know how it works, do I? So, Tony said to get me out of my bad mood, I could help myself to anything in the shop for breakfast. He said they wouldn't be paying me, and I kicked him a little bit, but he said I could have the odd snack now and again, for free. Also, anything out of date, I could have. And there was a whole box of Space Raiders in the back. Sorry, I'm just remembering the Space Raider frenzy. There was a whole box of Space Raiders in the back that went out of date last month. So, I tucked into them, made for a delicious breakfast. We spent an hour getting all the day's newspapers out and displaying them as you do in the newsagents. And I had a flick through the local rag mag, and then it hit me. This shop's got pornographical magazines on the top shelf. Now this thought both highly aroused me, but also terrified me. Because, you know, by the end of the day, I'd probably know what a lady genital looks like. I couldn't believe it. What a what a revelation to suddenly dawn upon me in a festive week. Hey up. You know, just 4:45 in the morning, I was thinking about how to murder a man, and now I'm thinking I might get to see a uterus? Don't know. Just don't know. The only worry I had was that I might also have to sell someone some pornographical magazines, which would be highly embarrassing. Or would it? Don't know. I think it probably would. Unless it was a woman. And I might say, hey up, love. I'll show you that live if you want, and then I'll whip out my nipples. Maybe. All I had to do was wait until Tony was either out of the shop, or if he'd gone in the back room to have one of his mid-morning naps. I could maybe get there. I can't. Anyway, I'm getting excited. We opened the shop at 6, and then 3 old men came in and bought tobacco and newspapers. Then no one came in till 10 a.m. But that was when I realised that we'd left the sign unclosed, so I think everybody thought the shop was shut. Lunchtime came, and I almost had finished off the entire box of crisps from the box I was allowed to eat, when Tony declared he was just popping out to get some lunch. This was it. This was my time to shine. Although I really, in retrospect, don't think anyone would say that what I'm about to do is a shining example of human life. And just as Tony left, two women came in and spent 8 minutes looking at magazines and not buying anything. And I was cussing them under my breath all the time. I'm sure they could hear me, but I'm not bothered. But then they left and I walked to the door and checked up and down the quite long road to see if anybody was coming. And no one was. Yet. This was it. 33 years of not knowing what a lady... fallopian tube looked like. But soon I'm going to know. I had a short, quick pang of bowel upset because I just got so nervous. My hands were shaking badly and my entire body was just flobbling at the thought of finally it's going to happen for me. So I walked over to the shelf of magazines and reached for some smut. And that was when I realised I couldn't reach the top of the bloody shelf because I'm too short. Unbelievable. I looked around for the entire shop. I looked around the entire shop for a Dalek, you know, the little steps, couldn't see him. But I did find a tiny stepladder with two steps on it. And aluminium, very light, I could lift it, it was fine. So I opened it up and began to take the two steps up to the top of the plinth. And tentatively I reached for a magazine called Busty Wenches. Then suddenly my vision went blurry and I found myself on the floor. But why? Well, the weak aluminium ladder could not support my bulk and I'd simply gone through the thing. Then it swore quite badly then. nanoseconds before I tumbled to the nasty gravity-based floor system that we've got in this country, I'd clapped my hands together, well, fist together, and just grabbed a magazine and brought it down with me. The ladders were completely ruined and I would never ascend them again, but I could feel I had a pornographical magazine in my hand. I looked at the magazine. It was called Attitude and there was a man on the front for some reason, don't know why. Tentatively I opened up the magazine and I was agog at what I saw inside. Just pages and pages of just funny naked men. I just sat there, bruised, stunned, and saddened. Every page, just a cock. Sometimes draped over a motorcycle. Sometimes two chaps just sort of coyly playing window cleaner with all soap on them. Disgusting. I felt a little bit sick and was sick in my throat. I don't know, it's fine if you like that kind of thing. Not a problem at all. But, you know, it's not something I want to look at. I was expecting to see the bustiest of all the wenches. Maybe some kind of, Oktoberfest type thing. Don't know. Then suddenly the door opened and Tony walked in. I tried to hide the magazine and the ladders, but I didn't have anywhere near enough time. Tony took one look at me, the magazine, gave me a slightly confused look. I said, I've got the wrong one, Tony. I was going for the busty wenches up there. Pass it to me. And he just sort of said,
okay.
But I don't think he believed me. He took the magazine off me, flicked through it for a second, and just said,
oof, blimey.
Then put it back on the shelf. And I just sat there looking, feeling sad, looking dishevelled, and just... It must have been a pathetic scene to witness so close to Christmas. It's becoming somewhat of a problem for me, the fact I've gotten this far and not seen a bosom. Really has. I think it's slightly affected my personality, just a little bit. Anyway, we had lunch. 4 sausage rolls each and 2 Christmas biscuits. Thank you very much, Tony. The biscuits were gingerbread men with red and white icing on. They were just called ginger people. I found that offensive and punched Tony's gingerbread person in the face. But it was fine. It was playful. And Tony didn't like it anyway. Hates the taste of ginger. Don't know why he bought it. So I had both his ginger purple people. They bought purple. And then we washed it down with an energy drink each. In the afternoon, I was sat behind the till, just twitching with so much energy. Tony said he would take over for a while I went back and restocked the shelves. Was very, very nearly sick in my throat then. There were 6 boxes of biscuits and 4 boxes of crisps to put out, so I did it in 3 minutes. I put every single item in the wrong place, but the route of the box, and I think that's what's most important. In the afternoon and evening, time seemed to stand still. Every time I looked at the clock, it hadn't moved. But that was because I realised that clock was bust, and it didn't move. But, even time still did seem to go quite slowly. There was at no point that Tony ever left my side, and that I couldn't find anything else in the shop to stand on to reach the adult literature. At one point, Tony rang for 2 takeaway pizzas, which he both ate with a plum. No, not an actual physical plum. The fruit. We just, ate it quite quickly. That's what I mean. The energy drink affected me quite badly, actually. I'm surprised. We shut the shop at 10 p.m. There'd been loads of customers throughout the day, but I think the festive spirit might have caught me, because I didn't mind serving them or even having a little chit-chat with some of the older dears. I still couldn't make eye contact with them, but I think I'm all right once a woman's past the menopause. I don't know why, because that makes them more randy, from what Dad says about Mum. Anyway, after work I staggered home and flopped down on the sofa. My ankles hurt, my wrists hurt, my blood hurts, and my eyes are tired. And I have to do it all again tomorrow, 5 a.m. Oh, the bastard.
23rd of December.
I got to the newsagents about 6:30 in the morning after I slept in a little bit. Tony were furious. I had a quick glance over to the adult section, but Tony had removed them all. So I consoled myself by opening one of the reduced advent calendars and eating just all the chocolates like a madman. Tony said he had to go to the bank to cash up or something, not entirely sure what he meant, and I was in charge for nearly an hour and a half. I shut the shop and looked absolutely everywhere for the saucy magazines, but I could find hide nor merkin of them. Hide or hair, do you get what I did there? Only 4 people tried to come into the shop anyway, so we didn't lose much money. I passed the time, whilst not looking for the smut, by opening a couple of the fake presents in the window, but they were just empty boxes. So I thought, right, sod this. I opened a few of the rubbish toys that they had for sale. One of them was a little pellet-firing gun, and the other was an instrument set with guitar, trumpet, drum, and tambourine. They're all a bit rubbish. So I opened some plastic army men and had a little battle around the chocolate bars. It was quite good. I made myself general, and I promoted myself to advanced general, king on high, and wiped out the entire blue army, because army men shouldn't be blue. They need to be melted with a cheap Bic lighter. Tony still hadn't arrived by 11 a.m, so I helped myself to 3 pasties from the fridge section. Then I opened the door and a grumpy woman came storming through the door, hobbling at me on crutches. She looked around and started having a right go at me for eating out of the food and playing with the toys. I don't know what she was on about. Turned out she was the owner of the shop, Tony's mother-in-law, and she'd had reports of the shop being shut, and she was absolutely furious with me and Tony as well. To be fair, he put me in charge, shouldn't give me that kind of power, because I'm going to shirk away from it and do as much as I can to just toss it off, so to speak. So she fired me. Couldn't believe it. Wonderful. And just as she'd finished berating me, Tony walked in, took one look around and pulled one of his faces and ran out the shop. She called back to us. Tony ran out to the shop and I ran off following him. Tony's mother-in-law called us both words which I can't and won't repeat because I couldn't hear it. I finally caught up to Tony and we went to the pub, and then 2 hours later and 6 pints each, we went back to the newsagents to hand her the keys because she kept texting him. But She'd locked up and all the lights were off, so we let ourselves in. This is where things get a little bit blurry, and by blurry I mean, I remember when we walked in, Tony thought it'd be a good lark to help ourselves to a bottle of whiskey each. He ordered a pizza, or four, or summit, and we watched some DVDs in the back room. I remember ordering the food, and I remember drinking the first cups of whiskey from some china. Then everything else after that is nothing but a distant memory of a half-forgotten dream. I remember Dad coming to get me and staggering home with me, and me being sick every step or so, and then sitting on the toilet feeling fine, like the vomit had purged me from all the alcohol out my system. But then Mum just walked into the toilet and just punched me in the chin. It's quite nice, it woke me up a little bit. Anyway, it's 11:53 now and I'm going to bed, and this is my last sleep till Christmas Eve, for reasons which I shall explain tomorrow. Good night, dear diary. I love you so much. Toodaloo.
23rd of December.
That's all. Put in too many vowels and you just scream at me for doing that.
Yes, well, like I said before, Paul, I wanted to try it, and I am trying it.
Oh, fair enough, don't give a frig. Right then, 23rd of December, let's crack on.
Oh, holy night, the stars are surely shining. It is the night of the Christmas.
Some don't know. No, oh, holy night, and this is it, the holy night of 23rd of December. It's the beginning of the end of Christmas. To be honest, I'm a little bit wistful, but I'm very, 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 very excited too. Let's just calm down. Right. The beginning of the end of Christmas, the 23rd of December, a day that's just twice as long as any other day of the year. And why is that? Well, as I'm sure you probably know, because I get so excited about Christmas morn, I can't and won't go to sleep on Christmas Eve unless I do this. What I do is on the 23rd of December, I stay up all night on purpose, so that when Christmas Eve comes, I'm so exhausted, I literally can't help but go to sleep. And then, of course, Father Christmas will come and bring me all my new toys, stockings, crackers, and what have you. So, that's it for me now. No sleep until Christmas Eve sleep, which takes me into Christmas bliss. I've been doing this since 1988, when I got sick of not being able to sleep on Christmas Eve. It usually works, but sometimes, very rarely, I get too tired and fall asleep too early. For example, in 1997, I fell asleep in the middle of lunchtime, which might sound like a hilarious Mrs. Brown Boys-style comedy event, but it wasn't, because I fell face-first into piping hot tomato soup. I was badly burnt and had to spend Christmas Day with a cooling ice pack on my face, which isn't as refreshing as you would think, because it gave me an ice headache all the time. But no, this year's going to be different. Oh, today, I think we plan to do our last big radio thax of the year, which was just a huge thax corner. Tony's out on the street in Hull, actually in the Maritime Museum, which has been the most popular location in Tony's out on the street segment of his entire life. Eugene and Swollen Len Shankroyd's man manning the phone lines and blocking anyone who sounds like they might cause trouble, if you know what I mean. But they'll also chip in with the Thax Corner chitter-chatter. Mummy and Daddy, of course, here. And we're very honoured to have Miss Armitage Biddy and Miss Armitage Berry and Miss Hollenberry, sorry, I'm bilious. As well as celebrity hairdressers Manana and Shazar. Maybe a few surprise guests, don't know. And by surprise guests, I mean Dad putting on the Queen's voice and pretending to be her, if he's allowed to. Should be one hell of a show. Ooh, hang on though. I've forgotten to think of a topic for the programme. Best footballing DVD? No. What's the worst episode of the Britas Empire? Maybe. Christmas wishes? Probably. Well, I better go. Tony will want to test the satellite link up. Or as I call it, mobile phone call on a speaker. Oh, Monday kitten has just come in front of me and blocked the paragraph I was reading with his furry bum. Now he's lifting his tail as if to hide any sort of indication of to what I might even been talking about. Come on, out the way. Out the way. I was tentatively, you little festive shit, move. I better go. You've put me right off now, you little ginger bastard. Anyway, I better go. Tony will want to test the satellite link up, or mobile phone call on speaker, as I call it. But as he's using a mobile cellular phone, then that goes up to a satellite, doesn't it? So he is correct to call it a satellite link up. Oof. Hey, I better go. I think Mum's shouting that she's put the heating on in the studio. No. And if you'd like to hear that Thack's Corner, then you'll just have to imagine it, because I've got no record of it. I think at one point somebody said the C word and we had to cut it short. Probably Miss Armitage Berry. Foul mouth on her sometime. Ooh. Hey, get off me. Get off me, groin. Why is he always trying to crawl on me? What's so interesting about me? Stupid kitten.
Still the 23rd of December.
But only just, only Cecil.
Yes, I know. I was going to say only just. Why did you interrupt me? That was my little bit to read.
No, Cecil, that was an aside in the diary that I was supposed to read. That's why it's highlighted in the Bovril colour.
Oh, I thought that was a toupee colour that I read.
No, that's Bovril, Cecil. That's toupee. It's two shades darker.
Oh, right. Still 23rd of December.
But only just. Well, what a good exchange of ideas, philosophies and ideologies that was. I was watching Newsnight Review. As for the massive Thack's Corner we did today, well, that went well too. Everyone seemed to have a good time. I'm not surprised, because we put out so much booze, snacks and nibbles. Even Miss Armitage Biddies and Berries stayed to the end without shouting and punching people for having different opinions to them. Although them and Mum got into a very heated argument about Brexit. I think it's probably one of the best corners we've ever done. I'm so happy. It's not just the booze talking. At one point, we got record numbers of 15 people listening on the internet. It's our biggest audience to date. And Mum says going on the internet radio will be a waste of time and money. Now all we need to do now is get each of those 15 people to pay us £242 each, and we will have broken even. So, dear diary, that's the end of this pre-Christmas Paul Thack's Radio Thack's Diary broadcast. You've only got one more next week. Kicks off on Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. Assuming, of course, that's a Monday, which it is, I think. If I just look at my Microsoft Windows calendar, it's a Monday. So, please join me next week for the final Paul Thack's Radio Thack's Dear Diary Podcast Thack's reading. And I can tell you now, it's 10 pages long. So it's essentially almost nearly half of everything I've read for the entire month. That's somewhat worrying to me, because, you know, it's hard work, isn't it, Cecil?
Why do you keep speaking like that? You scream at me when I talk to Posh, and you're speaking like, I don't know what, like some kind of buffoonery.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
I hope next week, Cecil, there's some conclusion to your silver trinket box. I have a strong suspicion there may be.
Yes, but there may also not be.
But there is.
Shut up, don't give it away.
I will give it away, Cecil. Anyway, have a nice week. It's nearly Christmas time. There's honey and wine.
That's my mead, you bastard. Don't drink that.
Sorry.
Come on, Paul. Let's go and pull a Christmas cracker.
Cecil, told you about Star Trek singing. Don't do it to me. It gets me well teary thinking about William Shatner and his falling out with Leonard Nimoy. Oh, that's not very nice to do to me, Cecil.
Sorry, Paul.
All right then. Happy Christmas so far.